Call to order, for the record, March 21, 2011, the House Education Committee. It's 8:07. Secretary, will you please call the roll?
Representative Kawasaki? I believe he's teleconference.
He's online with teleconference, yes.
Representative Wilson?
Here.
Representative Stevens?
Here.
Representative Feige?
Here.
Representative Pruitt? Representative Sisna? Chair Dick?
Here.
Thank you.
Okay.
Leave the bill.
And for the record, Representative Pruitt, let us know. Okay, everybody, turn off your cell phones. We do have this morning, yes, a live presentation this time. We have Superintendent Norm Eck from Northwest Arctic School District. And Superintendent Eck, welcome. It's good to have a face before us here. And for the record, Representative Sisson is with us as well. So. Sir, please go ahead with the presentation.
Thank you so much. For the record, I'm Dr. Norman Eck, Superintendent of Northwest Arctic Rural School District. It's quite an honor to be here, and I thank the committee for your work and what you're doing. You're tackling tough things, and also it's just great that you're asking school superintendents to come down and speak to you. Thank you so much for that. Thank you for this honor. I'll try to be brief this morning. Welcome to the Northwest Arctic Rural School District. This is facts and figures. Oh, I've given each of you a packet, which is more information than you'll ever want to know about Northwest Arctic, but it all is actually related and pertained to through this PowerPoint. And the PowerPoint has a lot of detailed information if you ever want to refer to something. On this slide, it shows this is taken from the census, and I don't know if folks knew, but the census, the United States Census, started in Norvik, in Northwest Arctic Rural School District. And the head of the census from Washington, D.C., the head man and all that, we had a huge celebration, took him on a dog sled ride and everything like that. And that's where the census started in for the United States, was in Norfolk, so 30 miles out of Kotzebue. So it's quite an honor. So I have the census information for you here on the borough itself. We didn't decline but we did increase by 315 residents over the last decade. On the next slide, the Northwest Arctic Leadership Team. This is where Manilik Association, our health association, NANA Corporation, the borough, and the Northwest Arctic School District, we work together on major issues that face our region. And the stated purpose is to maximize resources and reduce duplication of efforts to address issues affecting the people of Northwest Alaska while honoring and perpetuating our Inupiat cultural heritage. Our enrollment in 2011 is 1,778 students. This is a decline from 2006, about 274 fewer students. So it actually represents several millions of dollars for us. And so it's hurting because our infrastructure costs are 20% of our budget overall, and it's a factor. Our student population is 95% Alaska Native, and 88% free and reduced lunch. Now, the borough population is 88% Alaska Native, so our students are mostly local kids. The borough itself is larger than the state of Indiana. We have 410 employees, 190 certified, that includes administrators, 220 classified. We average about 100 graduates a year. We're the only school district with a post-secondary vocational center, the Alaska Technical Center, which is called COTS-TECH, usually down here in the legislature. And we have a great active GED program, and we award, on average, about 40 GEDs a year. And so that's sometimes our largest graduating classes through our tech center for the adults. So we're very pleased to be able to offer that program. We have 12 schools and 11 villages. We're the 11th largest district in Alaska. Our annual operation budget is approximately $55 million. Our current mission adopted by the school board is to graduate students with the skills and knowledge to be good citizens. And our vision is to be a leader in pre-K to 14 education based on student achievement and graduation rates. Our current strategic plan has centered around five goals of student learning, stakeholder satisfaction, employee development, support systems, and fiscal responsibility. Our school board was honored by the Alaska School Board Association this last November, and they were honored as the 2010 Alaska School Board of the Year, and they're very proud of that. They worked really hard as a group over a number of years now to better the entire situation for the school district. I was honored in 2009, the finest honor of my professional career, to be Superintendent of the Year. It was just a wonderful thing. And so that's all I have to stick that in. Cheryl Edenshaw, who's director of the Alaska Technical Center, in 2009, the Alaska Workforce Investment Board named her as the Alaska Vocational Educator of the Year. So we're honored also with that. Denali Whiting was a graduate of Cottsview High School last year, and she is representing Alaska in the Miss Teen USA contest. And so we're really proud of her, too. We're working to improve all aspects of our instruction, have been now for several years. We're involved in the one-to-one student laptop initiative. We're working, of course, as academics, as job one. We're working to rebuild our vocational programs through career and technical education. And, of course, you want to keep school fun with our co-curricular activities. And I have to mention this, that the young man in the bottom left corner, some of you know that my wife and I have two adopted children from Calcutta, India. You have to go back to that slide. And my son's the bottom left one there, working toward getting a pin. He's a junior this year. Students, we're working to have students take responsibility for their learning. I don't know if we have the sound. Could we click on the first speaker there? This is students making ads encouraging kids to do well on the exit exam and the HSGQE. It's not working. It would have come right up.
Okay.
Never mind. We'll go to the next slide. We're working to, in all areas, improve quality in instruction. With meeting the state standards, having a high-quality curriculum standardized across our entire district in all 12 schools, one district school-wide calendar. Before, a lot of times, villages would have their own calendars, and it makes it hard to mesh things together and to plan training in that. In-service training, high-quality in-service training for all our teachers, and to standardize our high school schedule so we can build a strong distance delivery program to our smaller regional high schools. Under academic achievement here, as you know, we were one of the five districts under intervention. And this last August, we were able to achieve the accomplishment of getting out of intervention. And I'm referring here to Education Week. Recently had an article that said only 1% of schools or districts that have been under intervention in the United States have earned their way out of it. So we were just really honored to be able to have done that. And our achievement, for example, in 2003, 36% of our students were proficient in language arts. That's gone up to 51%, 32 by 2008, 32% were proficient in math. So we had a 42% growth in language arts, 59% growth in terms of numbers of students proficient on the SBA test. So we're pleased and proud of that. And here's I excerpted from the letter that we got. I wish to confirm, this is from Les Morris, Deputy Commissioner. I wish to confirm the conversation we had this morning to inform you and congratulate you on Northwest Arctic School District being removed from intervention status. Congratulations on the effort of you and your staff to improve instructional practices in Northwest Arctic Girls School District. I mean, we just celebrated and had a great opening to our school year this year from being able to receive that. So my thanks to the department. The Alaska Technical Center last year had a first in which it was they had a core driller registered apprenticeship program. It was the first in the United States. And there's a picture of the 18 graduates. They were from all across western Alaska down into southwestern Alaska. Then also we're involved in developing the Star of the Northwest, a magnet school. And that's the Alaska Technical Center there, and then the addition that we're going to be building onto that to increase shop space and also to redo interior spaces to make the Alaska Technical Center more useful in terms of space and room. We had a we've had a $1.5 million three-year grant from the U.S. Department of Education to pilot this program to get it going. The three areas of emphasis is public school teaching, health careers, hopefully up to registered nursing, and process technology, which is mining and petroleum. And so my thanks to the Alaska Legislature for helping us do that. In U.S. News and World Report, July 12, 2009, Kotzebue High School was listed as one of the top 12 high schools in Alaska. According to the U.S. News and World Report, the schools were evaluated on the performance of all students, even the least advantaged. The schools were ranked by student achievement levels in the core subject areas of reading and math on state accountability tests that exceed statistical expectation given their levels of student poverty. So it shows by improving what you do in the school, you can make a difference in kids' lives in terms of their achievement. So we're really honored to be able to receive that. Then in 2008, also, one of our high school graduates, Reed Magdans, who's going to Yale, he'll be a senior this next year, was one of 139 presidential scholars in the United States. And there was a full-page ad in USA Today, and all 139 kids, and there was Reed Magdans. As you can see, I scanned it off the newspaper that I still have. And this last summer, he was an aide to Senator Begich in Washington, D.C. So, on behalf of the students, thank you for visiting Northwest Arctic. I thank you very much.
Representative Seaton.
Thank you. I appreciate the presentation. It's a little different than others we've had. I mean, what's your graduation rate and what are those AYP performance levels?
I apologize. We're about half of our students are still proficient. We've plateaued the last several years on the SBA scores. I didn't bring the graduation rate to get the exact numbers on the graduation rate. I didn't bring that with me.
Well,
apologize.
Follow. I guess if you had 100 students graduate.
Oh yeah, it's about 65%. Of the ones that were originally. It's just far too low, way far too low.
And I guess, obviously, intervention status worked for
these
numbers up.
Truly focus. It was really working together with the department. The department brought things to the table that were helpful to us. But we already were on the pathway of working to improve these things, too. I think we would have gotten there anyhow because we were already organized as a district. The school board had already said, you will work to improve these things. Working with the department, they brought a number of different things to the table that were helpful. I had two academic coaches, John Hulse for 2 years, and Richard Heppard for 2 years, that worked directly with me, and they're fine people, and they were helpful.
Representative Feige.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. One of your early slides there, you had a statistic of 40 GEDs, and your graduating classes are about how many folks?
About 100 in the cross district wide on average over the last 4 or 5 years.
So 40 GEDs was 40.
In addition to that.
That was 40 for the past year?
Yeah.
Why did those folks not get high school diplomas the first time around?
Well, these are people from anywhere from 18 to 50 years old that are in the GED program across our borough. Probably about half of the adults in the villages don't have a high school diploma.
Okay.
Same as about half of the folks in our villages aren't employed.
So you're simply generating that many because you're offering the program?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Representative Wilson.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm interested in the program. I can't remember what you called it, but it was the legacy careers for people in the North.
The Magnet Florida. School, yes, yeah. Yes.
And there was a picture of all the ones that had taken the core drilling.
Core drillers, yeah.
Yeah, and how many of them got jobs?
They all had jobs when they went into the program. There was drilling, several drilling rigs that were going to be working across western and northern Alaska. And so they were hired by the drilling company companies ahead of time and then put them through the driller program. There was this cadre here. Then there was two other cadres down in Bethel as well. We just simply were the first ones. And then we had another group later. So we had two, and in the Bethel area, they had two as well. So there were four over a period of a year and a half to go through the program.
Okay, follow up. So did the petroleum companies pay then for
yes.
them to be educated?
Yes, they did.
That's wonderful.
Very good. Representative Sisna?
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. My question... I have a tendency, unfortunately, to kind of want to ask more than fits within one question. But I'm really interested in one of the things that I've been seeing throughout Alaska. It's not just rural Alaska, but it's throughout Alaska. And that is really working to try to keep up with scores, trying to do that kind of thing. But both in the school, in all levels of school, and even outside of school, there doesn't appear to be the kind of emphasis to me that seems important on entrepreneurial development and on seeing all of the incredible assets that are held by especially some of the cultural groups that we have in the state, to really developing businesses. You've got internet in the schools. I guess you can't actually be selling that kind of stuff that way, but you certainly can be selling, and I saw the kids around the computer there on your slides. What's being done to try to make some of these things really turn into the potential for business?
Thank you very much. Should I say through the chair? The borough has an economic development department, and they're working just at that in terms of trying to develop online entrepreneurial business opportunities. So they've been working with some outside consultants to look at what are potentialities for people to sell whatever they would have to be able to offer. NANA, of course, does a lot. NANA now is a $1.6 billion grouping of businesses, not just the Red Dog Mine, but businesses all over the United States and even outside the United States. So there's a lot of work that's being coordinated through them. So NANA is doing aspects in terms of entrepreneurial development, and the borough itself is also working on that. Our job as a part of that, and that's through this NWALT organization, is to work to bring students to the table so they graduate and they've got the skills so they can be productive citizens and they can join in and have those kinds of opportunities and potentialities. Hence the re-emphasis now on career and technical education, because that had pretty much just across the United States gone by the wayside. And so we hired five CTE teachers just a year ago, decided our strategic plan said we have to go that way. So we sacrificed other areas to be able to put that back in the place for our villages. Villages are 60% of our student population, constitutes 40% of our population.
Right.
Can I follow up?
Yes, a follow-up would be, in all of that effort, which is outstanding, what effort is there in the very personal, or the very, not necessarily personal, but the very important part of all of that, how to start a business, how to keep a business going, which is very different than a subsistence way of looking at the world, and yet there are correlations.
Yes. No, thank you, through the chair. Thank you for that question. Also, It really is. You're speaking to someone who had, my wife and I had a printing company for 10 years, so we were in business, and we know exactly what's involved in that. And I bring to being a school superintendent a business outlook. That's how I look at things in terms of managerial and accountability and cost effectiveness. That's something that is a long road to bring folks, especially where it's remote, where there's very little infrastructure, to bring them into the realization, hey, you can do things. There are opportunities right here, especially when we have in our villages outside of Kotzebue about 50% of the adults not working. Another 20 or so percent are on unemployment, and maybe there's about 25% of the adults who are working. So we have to work to bring to the students in the schools, you can accomplish these things, but they don't have a lot of models right at home. And so these are the things that all are put into this to work on developing this image in their mind that they can do that.
Okay, we do need to move on. Representative Pruitt?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Two different questions, and if you would, it's just more for education of myself.
Yes, sir.
Say. I see here, and I'll read it for the committee so they know where I'm coming from, a concern about PFD release date affecting school funding. It indicates in the Education Workforce Development that was handed out to us that when the PFD checks are distributed, it impacts the number of students sitting in their seats at school. Unfortunately, these dates coincided with the monitoring dates used to calculate federal funding for area schools, resulting in an undercount. Can you help me understand that? Explain that to me, how that works?
Yeah. What happens when the PFDs come out, a lot of folks take off. They go to town. It's not a problem in 70% of Alaska, but they go because they now have money to buy things and do things. So families take off and go. Our attendance rate goes for several weeks. And it's not positive for the students' education to have that happening. It'd be much better if it was during a holiday time or during the summer. We've brought this up in many different forums around the state, but urban Alaska doesn't see it as a problem because they're right there where they can buy things. But they get these checks, and it means a lot of money to them. Especially if you have five kids and a couple parents, you've got something substantial to work with there. So you buy a lot of the things that you need for the year.
Interesting.
Representative Pruitt, second question?
Yeah, second question is, just and then to help me understand also your vocational facility there.
Yes, sir.
Sounds like, if I understand it correct, it's actually post-graduation.
It is. And the magnet school is going to make it so it's high school, is making it so it's high school and postgraduate.
So how does that funding work? Where do you guys get your funding
for that? We get our funding for the adults through the postgraduates through the Department of Labor, and our funding for the undergraduates simply through our student count.
Okay.
There's no other monies.
Okay. Thank you, Beth.
Representative Seaton.
Thank you. A couple things. First of all, just looking at your student population enrollment data, it's 1778. And if you take about a fourth of that, you're talking about 500 kids, and that means per class, and that means if you have 100 graduates, that's about a 20-25% graduation rate. So I'm going to need you to send
about 100.
Yes,
thank you.
I'm going to need you to send me some information.
Oh, yes, sir.
On what your four or five year graduation rate is, the entering cohort, and how many go through to completion, because that seems to be the lowest I've heard anywhere in the state. And so but one thing else I would like to inquire about is, there was conversations earlier when we were talking about the scholarship program and distance education, and I think you indicated that distance education didn't work for you guys for qualifying for those classes, and you've testified today that you have a coordinated schedule across the district.
That's what we're doing.
And so I'm not understanding at all why you can't coordinate the schedule for those advanced classes and have a highly qualified teacher giving the class and a teacher in each one of the places as a coordinator with that. So can you explain that a little more to me?
Thank you very much. We have on average about, back to the graduation rate, we have an average of about 150, 160 students in a class per grade. So when we have about 100 graduates, that's 100 out of 160.
Okay. So this graduate student population count is K-12, not,
yes, sir,
not
yes.
high school.
It
okay,
is.
So it's about 150?
Yeah, about 150 or so per class. It'll vary. Okay. Different classes will vary, sir. Thank you for bringing that up. And I will get to the exact figures that are published. Thank you for that. In terms of distance ed, I obviously was not clear with what I meant to say. Students who have to take those classes, distance ed, are at a disadvantage. It's harder for many of them to do that. Many students who could be successful in a higher level class can be successful when they have the advantage of the teacher present. But when the teacher is a distance away, and then you have your current teacher there to help you, to help understand it, but yet some of the subject matter is not in their expertise field, it places those students at a disadvantage. That is what I meant to say, and anything else that I would have said that was misleading to that, I want to apologize to you for.
So I guess I'm just trying to figure out, are you saying that you see you haven't been able to come up with any ways to educate students in these areas where they will be able to get the skills necessary?
I think we will now that we have the scholarship program. A few of those, most all of those kids who go for those higher level classes will either transfer to Kotzebue or go to Mount Edgecombe. It's only a few kids. We want to bring that to all our students. I just meaning that it's more difficult to do it through distance delivery, and that's why it's important that we have small regional boarding schools. So that way we could bring, if we have a boarding facility, we could bring those students in from the villages and they could go in Kotzebue where we can have those things offered.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah, quick question, Representative Wilson.
Well, I'm thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm looking at the page that says Star of the Northwest Magnet School, and I see where it says existing dormitory. So
that we have to construct that.
Oh, that's not built yet.
No.
Oh.
Yeah, we're working toward it.
Okay.
That's right.
Okay.
That's why I'm trying to make the case that kids need that opportunity to be resident, to be able to, the ones who are the high flyers.
Now, is this in Kotzebue?
Yeah, it would be. Yes, sir.
This magnet school is?
Yes.
Okay. And so the kids would have to come from the villages to this area, and then you would have to have funding. You'd have to build the building first, and then you have to have funding so that you can give them food and whatnot.
That's correct.
Excuse me, through the chair, if you would.
I'm sorry.
It's all right. But I do want to, we really do need to move on. We were trying to, we give Superintendent Eck, with 7 minutes, we said, we've gone into half an hour. It's fascinating, and we really do need to know all of this. Well, you've generated interest and enthusiasm. But before we do close down on this, Representative Kawasaki, I assume you're online. Do you have any questions for Superintendent Eck?
Yeah, actually, it's online right now. It's getting back on.
Okay, very good. If you don't mind. Very engaging. Thank you for being here.
Thank you so much. Thank you very much.
It's this portion of our meeting is really important. I just don't know how we can condense it.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I think I did it in less than 10 minutes. So.
You did. You kept your word.
Thank you. I did something right here.
Yes, you did. Okay. Thank you. Okay, the purpose, it is fascinating. And that's why we're here. This is why we're here, is to learn from these folks and make the decisions that are going to impact their lives and those 129,000 little guys. But the purpose of our meeting today, we have before us HB 104, Alaska Performance Scholarship. This is the seventh hearing. I really do want to get this out of committee today. We did adopt the committee substitute version I. We're going to take quick public testimony. We're going to consider some amendments, and we do have intent to move the bill out of committee. So, do we first off, do we have any public comments? I have nothing here. Anybody in the room that would like to comment? Public testimony closed. Good. Diane Behrens, would you mind to come forward and help us and help us through the process here? We do have five amendments prepared, and this bill has been there's been two issues here. One is it's a very complex bill. I talked to different people at different times. It's like hitting a moving target. It just keeps changing. It keeps morphing. It seems to be there's different layers of history and interaction. At the same time, I've been on a learning curve as the chairman, so it's that hasn't helped the process at all. But we are learning. If I did it again, I would do it differently. my understanding is that preceding this, before my time, this bill was before the legislature. There were some people that worked really hard on it, and there was a task force that met, and a lot of people put lots of hours into the effort of that task force. Representative Seaton, who was on that task force, responded to the best of his knowledge and memory, and his knowledge is pretty sharp, and he prepared a CS for us. If I did it again, if we could have dealt with each one of those issues individually, each one of us that is new on board would have had a chance to wrestle with those and look at the history of each one of them. But given, be it as it may, we have five amendments before us. If all five amendments are suggesting removing a portion of that CS, so minus and minus is, we would get back, Representative Feige.
Yeah, excuse me, Mr. Chairman, I only have four. Where's the fifth?
Two, three, four.
Are you talking about this right here, or are you talking about the actual amendment?
The actual amendment, wait.
I don't know what, I'm trying to make sure that Representative Feige has.
I have five.
Yeah, the actual. I only got four of these as well, but there are five.
This is just simple. Yeah, there we go. And it's just has to take. Okay. So each one of these amendments would remove from the CS that Representative Seaton brought to us a portion of it. We're going to deal with each one of those issues one by one. Unfortunately, they're not too interconnected. But as we deal with them, they're all, I think they're pretty plain to all of us now that we've wrestled with these issues so many times. So, with that.
Do we want to talk about it?
Please.
All right. I move that we adopt Amendment 4.
Amendment 4?
To.
Which one is that on?
Amendment 4 would be. Make sure I get the right one. Mm-hmm. It's I.4. It's the one relating to the use of the progressivity funds.
What's the number?
Well, I object for
if
discussion.
We want to talk about it.
Yeah.
We can just adopt it.
But this has to be amendment number one, doesn't it?
Yeah. You're right. Yeah. It's amendment number one. It's listed on, you guys will see it as I.4, and it's listed on here as number four, but it would be amendment number one.
Okay.
I apologize for that.
Yep. Not that we needed any more confusion. Yes, it would be our. On the paper you have, it's amendment number, it's listed as amendment number, it's I.4. But today, it's amendment number one.
Okie dokie.
You want to add E so we can make sure everyone's on?
Yeah, we'll call it at E. Representative Wilson.
Well, I kind of think it really muddies the water when we take the progressivity and from the oil funds and put it inside this. And so I personally would rather have this out. So I agree with amendment number one.
Representative Seaton.
Yeah, and I'd just like to offer a little explanation on why it's in there. When the revenue sharing model was adopted to go forward because we did not have any kind of consensus, or there was definitely opposition in the last legislature to doing a separate defined fund, large endowment fund, the revenue sharing model that we use for municipal revenue sharing had 20% of progressivity as a mechanism for funding. So that's the only reason why it's in here. As long as we have it so that the legislature can appropriate from funds each year to do the funding, it doesn't matter to me. And there was also on the task force, there was concern by strong opinions by some individuals that they wanted to tie the oil money in the state to the scholarship because they often campaign against leases and some of those kind of things, and they wanted to make this tie so that people receiving scholarships would know that their scholarship had some tie to our non-renewable resources in the state. And so that's the only reason this is in here, was those two reasons. So I am comfortable removing this as well, as long as we don't take the portion out that allows the general fund money to, or some other source of funding. So anyway, thanks for the explanation.
Representative Sisna.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I have areas of sort of broad areas of not really understanding enough about this because I've never served on finance. But it is a finance issue. And oftentimes, if you've gotten things in place with some form of funding, because that's what I keep on hearing over and over again, is need to have a source of funding. And this is an important bill. I would be a little concerned about taking out something that has made something possible. And you guys know better than I do, but I may actually vote against this just on the fact that I don't know enough to vote yes.
Okay. Any other comment? Representative Pruitt.
I want to make sure that everyone understands. If we go to, if you're on page 8 of the current CS, the section is under 4, but it directly pertains to line 11, 12, and 13. You'll see that money appropriated to the fund, income earned on investments and donations to the fund. There are still ways, there's still means and mechanisms in which the money can be appropriated here without actually tying in the 15% of the or the progressivity aspect to it. So I want to just to answer the question there that there there still is mechanisms to make sure that there's
all this.
And I guess I would comment that as I've done my try to do my homework and research on this, it really does seem to muddy the waters and would actually decrease the chance of the bill passing if it were in this form. Just because it... Okay, so I personally believe the amendment should stand because it's removing something that's really clouding a very important issue.
I'll remove my
objection. Remove your objection. Not hearing any other objection, the amendment.
Objection?
Not hearing any other objection, the amendment passes.
No, he's
objected.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you, sir.
He's objected.
I'm listening. Go ahead, sir.
He objected, so.
Roll call vote.
And, okay, so okay. His reasoning is for roll call.
Mr. Chair?
I understand. Gwen?
Could I ask Mr. Feige, pardon me, Representative Feige, to speak to his objection?
Yeah, that's proper.
I guess my objection is I believe the amendment should. I take that back. I remove my objection.
Okay. Hearing no other objection, the amendment passes.
All right, now we'll try to make sure that we get this correct this time. Amendment 2 will actually be Amendment I.2. So I move that Amendment 2, that we adopt Amendment 2.
And I object for discussion.
Okay.
Amendment 2, page 5.
Representative Seaton, do you want to speak to this?
Sure. If we look at page, I guess it's page 5, lines 15 and 16. Let's catch up. Or if we look at page 5, this is amendment number 2 on lines 8 through 13. The task force dealt with a number of items, and of course the purpose of the task force was to look at funding and also at ways to improve the program. And the task force has found that there were two things that we should require of post-secondary institutions that are accepting the scholarship, because the purpose of our scholarship is not to spend money, but to get completion and graduations out of both college and career tech programs. So these two things are, one, we had very definitive evidence that advisory programs are very beneficial, probably the most beneficial thing we can do, as to moving people from getting into a program so that they continue and graduate from the program. So for making sure that the state gets the biggest bang for the buck, we don't want to just put people into school, we want them to complete school. So that was the advisory portion, and as you know, when we met with the three chancellors of the university, they all accepted that they could do this and that it made sense for them as well. The second portion, starting on D on line 11, is that the courses and credits can result in within the time frame of the degree. In other words, we don't want people going into class expecting to be able to graduate in a 4-year and then having the institution not offer the courses during the 4-year schedule to be able somehow to be able to get it, whether they need additional classes through distance ed or something. But we've had the problem in the past that people cannot graduate within the realm of our 4-year scholarship with a 4-year degree because the institutions were not offering the courses for certain degrees that they needed to. So this has been a nationwide effort to make sure that whether it's vocational programs or whether they are college programs, that they offer a time frame so that people can graduate. That's not a guarantee that everybody will expend the effort and take all the classes that they need in the appropriate orders, but at least there's an offering so that people, if they want to, when they take the scholarship and go to the institution, they have the opportunity to make their way through. It's a tremendous lost opportunity for our students that we are funding through this scholarship if they're not able to graduate on time, and it also costs a whole lot more because that's an additional year of burden that they would have to adopt. So that's what That's what both of those were, and they came from the task force, and there's been pretty much agreement that they can provide a pathway, not a guarantee that everybody will take the pathway, but that they will provide pathways for the scholarship recipients that they can graduate if they expend the effort.
Okay. Diane, would you want to speak to that?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Diane Behrens. I'm the Executive Director of the Alaska Commission on Postsecondary Education, and I would only concur with the report from Representative Seaton.
Okay. Representative Seaton.
So, Mr. Chairman, I would ask the committee to turn down Amendment Number 2 because these are things that will make our scholarship more valuable to every student. And the institutions have said that they can comply and do this, and completion is our goal, not just giving out scholarships.
Mm-hmm. Representative Kawasaki, are you online, and do you want to comment? Okay. Okay. So I guess we, Representative Wilson.
I'd like to make some comments. I think the university needs to, I think this is important, and I think that they need to offer the program or the courses so that people don't have to spend 5 years taking college or six. And so I like this part of it, and for the reason that I think we can't afford, for more than one reason. First of all, people can't afford to go 5 years. Because of the time, because they need to get busy and get to work, and so you know that they're losing a whole year of work if this is strung out like this, and so I just kind of like it.
Okay. Representative,
the question. Representative Wilson, I think you're saying that you like the requirements, but you don't like the amendment because that would remove the requirements. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Thank you.
Okay. We have a couple double negatives going on here. Okay. We don't want, not, okay. So, are we ready for vote? Secretary, will you call the roll? Oh, and we're understanding here that by voting yes on the amendment, we're removing the clear path and the counseling and coaching in college. By voting no, you're actually voting in favor of a clear path and counseling and coaching. That's the understanding.
And
Representative Wilson.
And having the university offer the courses on time.
That's mm-hmm. it. Okay. Yes. Secretary, please call roll.
For Amendment Number 2 to HB 104, Representative Sisna.
No.
Representative
Kawasaki
is not present. Representative Wilson?
No.
Representative Seaton?
No.
Representative Feige?
What's the question?
Amendment number two, by voting this down, you're actually voting in favor of ensuring a clear path, 4 years, all courses available in 4 years, and counseling and coaching will be available.
No.
Chair Dick.
No. With that, the amendment number 2 fails.
All right.
No. We're to our amendment
I
number
move
3.
That's amendment 3. We adopt amendment 3, which is I.1.
And I object for discussion.
Okay, let's take a brief at ease and make sure we're Education Committee back to order. Okay.
We had an objection.
So. We had an objection. So, discussion. Representative Seaton, would you want to speak to this this amendment, and then we'll ask Diane Behrens to speak to it as well.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess what we're looking at here is the concept of the dedicated needs-based for scholarship component of the Alaska Performance Scholarship. So we are talking about the component that if a student qualifies for the Alaska Performance Scholarship and has unmet need, then this would ensure that the after subtracting the $2,000 for the student work, that the state would pick up 50% of the unmet need for attendance, and that's based on the 2010 capped at the 2010 cost of attendance, just like the APS or the merit portion is capped at the 2010 tuition amount. So that's what this does.
Okay.
And I think I'd just like to say that I did pass out last time the graph showing that the state of Alaska is the lowest in the nation up for needs-based students going to or of lower income graduating students going to college. We're at 7.8%, I believe it was, and the next lowest is over 14% of their students. So we are way behind, and the reason for having this in here is so that there's full knowledge that if you work hard and take the rigorous curriculum and qualify and you're from a lower economic group, that there is a dedicated amount that will go to help you as far as being able to utilize the scholarship you qualify for.
Diane, would you like to speak to this?
Certainly. Diane Behrens for the record, Mr. Chair. Just to echo the comments that I have made in the past regarding a needs-based entitlement under the scholarship program, the administration does believe that this confuses the goals of this particular program, the Merit Scholarship Program, and we do believe that a simpler, more easy to understand approach is to ensure that the existing needs-based program, which these students would be eligible to apply for and in the pool for that program, that with sufficient funding, the low-income students who also qualify for the merit scholarship would qualify for a needs-based grant. It is not as much of a grant. Currently, the maximum under that program is $3,000 a year. This would give an additional $4,000 a year. But we do believe that in combination with the other aid available to students through the federal grant program, the merit scholarship, if they qualify for that, it makes a meaningful difference to those students and is the best approach going forward.
Representative Feige, you need to...
Nope.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Representative Pruitt?
One of the things I want to just... I kind of want to concur with Ms. Behrens is the intent of this bill is to make sure that we're focusing on the performance aspect. And I know that there's definitely some needs out there. And I don't think that by taking this out we're disagreeing with the fact that there's people that need needs. We already have the Alaska Advantage and some other programs that exist that give that opportunity for the needs base. And I just feel that we really are probably, muddying the waters by combining those two as opposed to maybe doing our due diligence with what we currently have that and exists and maybe funding it in additional if that's what we feel is as the proper method to go about it. So I would concur with the amendment on here. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And the problem with removing this is that we will then have an Alaska Advantage program, which is trying to do two different things. Right now, the Alaska Advantage program, basically, by the way it's structured, it targets non-traditional students, which is somebody that we really need to target, and we really need to get our workforce educated. But to try to target non-traditional students, and in the same criteria, to target kids coming right out of high school that worked hard and took the rigorous curriculum and did those things, is going to be extremely difficult. This is why we weren't able to do non-traditional students when we devised the program in the last legislature. I mean, we were diligently trying to figure out how to do that. And if you can combine the programs, there's no assurance that the kids coming out of high school that are going to qualify for APS are going to qualify for the needs-based portion, because Alaska Advantage could be rewritten. It could be rewritten, but we're not rewriting it. And if it is rewritten, how do you do that and then say we're still going to use it for the non-traditional students? It's when you have one program trying to accomplish two different goals, we have a great problem that one of those goals is going to fall by the wayside, and it may be that it's going to be perceived that, oh, well, gee, you're not going to be assured that you're going to be able to, if you're an Alaska performance scholarship from low income, that you're going to be able to qualify for this because whatever money's allocated gets allocated to the neediest first, and the neediest we know are the non-traditional students that have families and have greater expenses and those things, rather than somebody coming right out of high school. So we have not seen any way. We've been told that, well, maybe we could rewrite these in ways to accomplish two different goals with one program, but we haven't seen those. And to me, it's much clearer for us, since what we're doing is the merit scholarship, to make sure that all those qualifying for the merit scholarship know that if there is the unmet need, that they will have a portion of that paid through the statutory framework that we allow. So that's why I'm going to oppose the amendment to take this out, because we worked long and hard to try to make sure that there was that pull from not only the upper economic groups through the merit scholarship, but for the lower economic groups too. And so some people consider it a mixed message. To me, it's a very consistent message to say that if you qualify for the APS scholarship, we also have a needs-based component if you're from a lower economic group, so that you will be able to use that. And so I don't think that's a mixed message at all. So thank you.
Mm-hmm. Representative Wilson.
You know what, it appears to me that if we leave this in, that we're then taken away from the non-traditional student. And that, I hate to do that, because there's a need for them also. And it's kind of, if we do it one way, then we're leaving out the non-traditional student, and if we do it the other way, the students that qualify for the APS still might be able to qualify, depending on the funding. Am I right, or?
That's correct.
Representative Seaton.
That's correct. But you don't know what the qualifications are going to be for the Alaska Advantage program. And this bill that we have before us includes funding for the Alaska Advantage program in the bill. It's specifically in here. So we can add an addition that, you know, half of the money will go for Alaska Advantage and half will go for the needs-based component for the Alaska Performance Scholarship. But right now what we have is a situation in which we are saying all needs base is going to be in one pot, and whatever those regulations are, it's not going to ensure that the merit-based scholarship kids are going to get it. And the traditional problem has been that Alaska Advantage has been underfunded, and that's why Alaska Advantage was rolled into the program, to make sure that there would be funding for the Alaska Advantage program as well.
Representative Pruitt?
I'd be worried, thank you, Mr. Chairman, I'd be worried that by grouping these together that we still have the possibility of leaving some of the people that might have qualified for the actual performance aspect out, because we're going to have the same pool of money going towards both the performance as well as some of the needs base. Because at some point we're going to have to determine when do we stop giving money out and where's the preference by grouping them in both of those situations into this one fund, this one program, as opposed to making sure that the performance individuals are met wholly through this, and then allowing then separately through the needs-based function to be able to do what we need to meet those individuals. At some point, we're going to have to differentiate where the money goes, even in this particular one. So I feel it would be best to leave it based on the performance portion, that we can fund the performance portion. We're not going to have to make a judgment that says, will we give certain people the needs-based and leave out potentially some of the people with the performance-based. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, I think this is maybe the most important issue we're going to deal with today. So let's not be afraid to have some discussion. Representative Feige.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll be quick. You have two different issues. You have trying to reward students to take a rigorous curriculum and perform at a high level. And the other problem is people that perhaps don't have enough to go to college. Those need to be kept in separate programs because they're separate issues. This amendment needs to pass because we need to decouple the two issues. And I will support the amendment.
If I could first, my thought is that we're really, it seems to me I'm choosing between two negatives. I love the message of the original bill. Work hard, be a scholar, and there's a reward out there for you. I get that. And so this model here kind of clouds that message and muddies the waters. At the same time, I don't like the idea of having the non-traditional students competing in the same pool or pot as the students just coming out of high school, because it is comparing apples with oranges. There's totally different criteria. And the reason I think we're struggling is because how that is decided is really those criteria have yet to be drawn up. The good news is I really trust Diane. And I really do. And so I think it was anybody but Diane there, I might have real hesitation. But I do have confidence that she has the ability to draw that up in a way that the priorities will be accurate. But I think the reason we're wrestling with this is because those criteria have yet to be defined. And we all have a picture in our minds what we want to say and what we want to do. And I think lacking that definition is why we're wrestling back and forth. Diane.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Diane Behrens for the record. First of all, thank you for that vote of confidence. It is a challenge, though. And I would speak to one of the comments that Representative Seaton made regarding the Alaska Advantage Grant Program having to do multiple things. The program already does multiple things. The program, as it's existed since 2005, has an existing priority consideration in two areas. One, high academic achievement, and the other is in students who are enrolled in workforce shortage areas that have been identified. So that already exists. What has happened is the program at its lowest level was funded at about $600,000 per year, and that was a combination of student loan corporation receipts and federal dollars. The highest year that we awarded was just shy of $2 million, And it's really as a function of funding. But I would tell you that in that year that the funding level jumped up to $1.9 million, we actually had almost, I think it was 26% of the students receiving grants that year were 22 or younger. So we did have, by simply increasing the funding to that level, you did have a representational allocation of the grants that reflected the student body in Alaska. There is a much larger group of older students attending institutions in Alaska. So that, I believe it is a function of funding, and I think there is a way for the two programs to work very successfully together. But I would agree with the Vice Chair's comments that at least from a legislator's perspective, there's much more clarity if you have a program that is a merit program and a program that is a needs-based program, and then discussion about how they work together follows after that major understanding, which is what are we funding by funding this program or that program.
Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And you know, we got on our table today the fiscal note for Virgin I, and you know, I would like to draw people's attention to that because you're seeing down on the bottom there for the years, it's once fully implemented, which is FY 15, you have $20 million for the APS, you have 6.4 for the APS needs-based portion and 6.9 for the other, for a total of $34 million. And you know, the discussions that have been, if we fund Alaska Advantage at $10 million, then we'll cover the need. But of course, we're already saying right here in the fiscal note that the $10 million that's been talked about is going to be almost 50% short of the need. So who are we going to cut out in these two segments, the APS students or the Alaska Advantage students? So those are their analysis of what the programs would cost if they're implemented. So if we're implementing them at about 50% less than is said is going to be, would be utilized under the program, it means that we are going to be underfunding the program again, and we are going to be saying that, oh, well, we can solve this problem. We're going to be short again. I mean, by the very analysis that we've got in the fiscal note and the only reason I say is 15 is that's when you've got 4 years of students already in the program. So that's the ongoing projected cost because they're, both of those are capped. I just thought that should be pointed out because we're talking as if Alaska Advantage is going to have enough money to accomplish all the goals for all the students, and I don't see it.
Mr. Chair, if I may, Diane Behrens for the record. In developing the fiscal note, it's important to notice that the needs portion for the that the current CS has in it allows a 25% greater award under the supplemental needs program than does the existing grant program. So bear in mind that the existing grant program has a maximum per student grant of $3,000 a year. What is proposed under the CS for the needs-based supplement is $4,000 per year. So of course, those numbers would calculate out differently than for were they to receive Alaska Advantage grants.
Representative Wilson, I was hoping to hear from you.
I'm looking at the fiscal note. I've got four of them, and they're very confusing to me. Only one of them says that there's any money needed, and so I'm looking at that one actually. And maybe I didn't get to the back. Yeah, the one that says that we do need money. Diane, could you go over the back page with me just to explain to me what exactly, I'm not sure I know what an AEG is.
Yes. Thank you. Through the chair, Representative Wilson, the Alaska Advantage Education Grant, we shorten it to, it's a mouthful, so we shorten it to AEG. So that's what I'm referring to when we use that acronym. What I wanted to show in this analysis was not only the component costs for the new supplemental aid program, but also the costs for estimates full funding of the Alaska Advantage Education Grant, or AEG.
When, can I ask her?
Follow up.
So when you say full funding.
We have estimated, through the chair, Representative Wilson, we have estimated, looking at the current pool for the 2010-11 grant year, we have estimated if we had enough money to award all of the students to the amount they're eligible for, what would that dollar cost be? So that's when I say full funding. And the reason I didn't actually put expenditures on the front side of the fiscal note is I don't know what the intent is in terms of funding that program. If it's a 50% funding, is it 100% funding? Similarly, you know, we presume that the merit program, whether it's merit slash needs, would be fully funded. I don't know that that's the intent. So I developed the numbers here based on the participation rate calculations that were developed in last year's fiscal note. You may recall that we looked at the high school graduating class, and we presumed that just slightly less than 29% of them would be eligible for the performance scholarship and use it in Alaska. So I took those headcount numbers and calculated the cost in order to come up with an average supplemental award. We looked at the number of high school graduates from the 2010 Alaska graduating class who went on to post-secondary education at the University of Alaska. We looked at their average unmet need, and we used that average unmet need amount to, we plugged it into the formula that the CS calls for, which is their cost of education less the family contribution less the $2,000 self-help contribution, and then the state and the student would split 50-50 the amount that they would each contribute to those remaining costs. And I came up with the average supplemental award of $1,122. In reality, of course, you would have a number of students who didn't qualify for any aid, and you would have another set of students who qualified for larger needs-based supplements. So that was developed with the average. We do have in the CS that a segment of the bill does not take effect until 2013, and that was to allow the commission to develop regulations around the needs-based supplement, put in the programming that would need to be in place to do all the calculations and identify the students. So you notice that in FY13, that would be the first year that there is a cost associated with the supplemental award. But you would already have two cohorts of students in the pipeline, so year one costs are account for two cohorts of those students. And then throughout the fiscal note, I just used our current estimate for full funding of the grant program. That's that $6.9 million that you see reflected in the chart at the bottom of the analysis section.
Follow up?
Can I follow up with a series of questions here?
Please do.
Okay.
Excuse me. This is maybe the big issue, the biggest issue we're going to wrestle with, so let's do this one right.
Okay. Your average needs, first of all, is almost $7,000, and never were we intending to, I think that's what that says.
$7 million.
Oh, yes. Well, oh, that's the total amount. Okay. All right. All right. Okay. So is it going to take you 2 years to do the regulations? Can't you do it in 1 year?
Certainly, through the chair, Representative Wilson, and that would go into effect a year from July. So the regulations would be in place. The bigger picture issue for us is putting the programming in place. We began work on the scholarship management software very aggressively after the bill passed last year. We expect to have that program up and running by late April of this year. So because of the complexity involved in that system, we added no additional staff to manage that program. It relies on a fairly sophisticated software program that would have to be substantially altered to add yet another piece into the scholarship eligibility management. I mean, it's that complicated. So that's why we would need another year. It's not actually 2 years. It would be the first students receiving that would be fall of 2012, which is the FY13 year.
So the kids that think they'll qualify this year aren't going to qualify.
This is only for the supplemental needs portion, so only the new portion that this CS would add in, not the merit scholarship. The merit scholarship is going to be ready to roll in about 30 days.
Okay.
Brief at ease. We complete that discussion.
Yeah.
Okay. Who objected?
I did. I'll remove my objection.
I'll object.
Okay. You're going to object. So are we?
Call the roll.
We have an objection. So then we're ready to vote. Secretary, you want to call roll?
Clarify what we're.
Oh, excuse me. We're voting on amendment number
three, which would be one on here.
I dot one.
And to vote yes on the amendment means to remove it from the CS, which means to remove this from the CS. To vote no means to leave this model in the CS. Secretary, please call roll.
Amendment 3, House Bill 104, Representative Pruitt.
Yes.
Representative Cisna.
No.
Representative Kawasaki is not present. Representative Wilson.
Yes.
Representative
Some PTSD right there.
Do you want to go ahead and call with the...
Yes, please do. We're going to deal with...
We'll go ahead and make sure that they're announced for the record that the memo was adopted.
Okay, excuse me, thank you. For the record, amendment...
That was amendment number three.
Was R3.
It was I dot one.
Passed... Yeah, I don't want passed. So, for the record.
All right. I move that we adopt amendment number 4, which is I dot 3. Hold that up here. Number 3.
I dot 3.
I dot 3, which will be number 4.
Okay. Okay, amendment number three, this would delete the reference to Amerita Hess as a funding source, and it does not designate a funding source. And we wrestled with this in times past, and whether we would Amerita Hess would be referenced as the source of funding for this bill. Representative Seaton, you want to speak to that, please?
Sure.
Excuse me? Oh.
Oh, I object for discussion.
No, there we go.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Again, the task force looked at funding sources and, was directed to the recommendation looked at dedicating or identifying sources of funding. The reasons for that was that it was seen that GF appropriations to fund the scholarship on a year-by-year basis was not a model that worked very well. Amerita Hess spins off generally about $20 million, $22 million a year. That would provide approximately half of the funding or more than half of the funding that would be needed. And it was seen as long-term-wise, depending on fluctuating general fund revenues, it was seen as a way to reduce the amount that would have to be appropriated on an annual basis from the general fund for the scholarship program. It hasn't been used in the past 3 years. There is, in fact, a loss in the fund, and so all of the income, the earnings on the fund for 2 years and part of this year have been going up to make the principal of the Amerita Hess fund because it resides in the permanent fund, although it can't be used for dividends. And so that was repaying the corpus because we can't spend the corpus of the fund without going through a vote of the people. So that's making back up the corpus, and now there's some money to spin out. There's also about $52 million in there, so that would if we incorporated the Amerita Hess fund, it would give an initial funding source for the fund. And this is, again, looking at the revenue sharing model. So you would have a $160 million fund there. So I guess that's about the explanation from the task force.
Okay. Diane, would you want to speak to this, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Diane Behrens. It's my understanding that this was one of the four recommendations that came forward from the task force in its final report. I think one of the things that Representative Seaton has alluded to is a concern, and that's the predictability of the availability of funds from the Amerita Hess account. I believe that the Deputy Commissioner from Revenue, Jerry Burnett, is here. He could speak to kind of why predictability is an issue with this fund, but I know that there were some principles that the task force was interested in seeing carried out, and one was a sustainable source of funds for the program, and the other was predictability, that it was both sustainable and reliable in terms of funding. As you know, the governor's approach was to use an account within the general fund, the earnings from which would support the program. But I can't really speak to the intricacies of this particular investment piece.
Yeah, is Jerry Burnett here?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Jerry Burnett. I'm the Deputy Commissioner for Treasury in the Department of Revenue. The Amerita Hess Fund payout is based on realized earnings of the permanent fund, And unlike the dividend payout for the permanent fund, which is a five-year rolling average payout, and there's money collected in the earnings reserve account so that you ensure that you have amounts for dividends and calculate, the Amerada Hess fund is simply the payout of the earnings on that fund, the realized earnings on that fund. Realized earnings over the past several years have been from approximately, I think, $37 million on this 1 year and down to negative amounts in 1 year. So you can get when you're using realized earnings, you can get a tremendous variability. So you've had from $0 to $37 million paid on an annual basis from the earnings over the past several years. The concept of funding this was to fund it with an amount which is placed in a fund, and then there's a percent of market value payout. So you're paying out 5% of that balance every year. So even if you have variations in earnings, you will have a fairly steady stream of payments from it. So that would be a better concept for making sure that you had payments that you could use every year. The Amerada Hess Fund is something that certainly would give you money over a long period of time, but how much each year is very subject to the whims of the market and also investment decisions of the Permanent Fund Board.
Representative Seaton.
Yeah, and just so everyone's clear, when the task force was working on this, they were looking at trying to find a diversity of revenue funds. That's why there was a progressivity piece to balance with the Amerada Hess Fund. We've taken out the progressivity piece. You know, as long as the legislature wants to appropriate money, I think, you know, Mr. Burnett is talking about the ideal where we would have a, you know, constitutional dedicated fund. And then, or a statutory dedicated fund, it'd have to be about $600 million. The reason the task force worked on this was because in the past several years, when the bill went to both finance committees, there was a definite reluctance to put 600, at that time it was 400, and now we're talking about $600 million for the two funds, into a not a dedicated fund, but a designated fund that would do this spin-off on a POMV. If there is a willingness by the other committees in the legislature and the legislature itself to go to a designated fund now with $600 million in it, that would give us the most stable outlay. The reason why we did a task force was there was no willingness to do that. So I would hate to put ourselves in the position of saying the perfect that has been rejected is now counterbalanced, so we don't want to do something else because the perfect is out there. Because, you know, I do agree that, and we passed out of the Education Committee last year the fiscal note that was a $400 million fiscal note at the time. But it was a fund that could be increased further if necessary. But we need to look at the reality. But as far as this amendment with Amerada Hess, I agree that Amerada Hess is not necessary for the fund to exist as a revenue sharing model, as long as the legislature is willing to figure out some other sources, even if those are GF, to fund the source. And, you know, since there is reluctance among other folks to do the Amerada Hess portion as one of those designated pieces, you know, I'm perfectly willing to remove it. We were looking for those that we might be able to go forward with and provide funds to something that the Education Committee thought was extremely beneficial to all Alaskans, and that was an educated workforce through a scholarship fund so that we get the educated workforce. So sorry for being so long-winded, but just to back up as to where the where the task force was coming from and why the task force even looked at this in the first place. It was just looking for fund sources. So, Mr. Chairman, there's no, I don't think the task force relied on any one source of funds, and if this is unacceptable, that's, you know, perfectly fine to take it out.
Mm-hmm. Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was on the task force also, and it was mentioned that if we could find something that was adequate, that would take care of this, but it was never mentioned, any specific fund was never mentioned, and seeing the history of this, I'm a little bit concerned that legislators will think, oh, well, we've got it taken care of, we don't have to worry about it, and so it's going to be out of my mind because I've got other things to think about, and there would be very possibly years when there was nothing in that fund to take anything out of. So for that reason, I would be a yes vote on this.
Mm-hmm. Jerry, help me understand, excuse me, I'm not a finance person. I think what's in all of our hearts is we just want to make sure this is a sure thing for the kids. And so would you just comment on that if we choose to remove this Amrita Hess, how we could have that assurance that it'll be there for them?
Mr. Chair, I can't. You're going to have to find some source of funding for it, and whether, you know, the Amrita Hess funding, the concern with the Amrita Hess funding is the markets are fickle, the definition of earnings is such that you may or may not have money in every year. So you're going to have, the finance committees are going to have to find a source of money in order to make this stable. I can't tell you what that source of money is at this point. Obviously, as Representative Seaton mentioned, and as was the original concept of this, the governor's plan was to put money into a special fund with a certain payout and investment rules and use that. And where that money comes from is really a matter for the finance committees to decide. So
it seems then, that, and with all due respect, it seems like we're choosing between fickles. There's the fickle of the market and the fickle of the those that are down the road from us. That seems to me to be the choice. Representative Cisna.
It seems obvious to me that somehow, in order to get this through the legislature, there's got to be money for it. And to look at where money is going to come from in a year or two, what we don't know is what the price of oil and gas will be in a year or two. And that seems to determine a huge amount of what happens in our lives. And we've been floating along right now with high prices. And so if we just go ahead and say, well, it'll always be high prices, we can feel like we did our job here. I continue to be concerned about the fact that knowing that there's some money somewhere that you could put in there and then fill it out with other money if you needed to, just from someone who had to budget a lot on income I never knew for sure where it was going to come from. I think it's a little dangerous for us to take that away, and what I'm hoping is if we do, that the Finance Committee does at least think about that as a source of money. So that's what I'm saying.
Okay. Any other comment?
Okay. I remove my objection.
You remove your objection. Hearing no other objection, the amendment passes. That would be amendment number four. Which is I.3. I shouldn't have done that. Well, I was just trying to work up to the heavy, you know. Just start out on the easy one and work up to the heavy. Okay, we have...
Mr. Chairman, I move that we adopt Amendment 5, which is actually I.5, so hopefully this one will be a little bit easier for us to ascertain here for our consideration.
Mr. Chairman, can we have an at ease while we get the amendment?
At ease? Education Committee back to order. Okay. Representative Pruitt, do you want to comment on I.5?
Do we have an objection?
I'll object.
Okay. Okay.
Maybe Jerry, if we can ask both Jerry and Diane, maybe to comment.
Did you want to speak to this first?
Sure, I'll speak to it. On page 8, lines 19, we're talking here about the revenue sharing model, the $40 million or the $160 million, and this is the spin down, I believe. The department shall distribute 1/3 of the amount of the 40, whichever is less for deposit. This is what gives security to students that have made the contract with us and that come in and qualify, work hard, take the rigorous curriculum, qualify for the program. And if we don't have this section in the CS, it means that there is no security that there's any money there to pay their amounts. What it means is that we are funding on an annual basis, and every year, any year we don't fund it, no scholarships are given because there is no account. What we've done in the CS is establish a $160 million funding account, of which we take out, just like the revenue sharing model, so that if the legislature runs on hard times or decides not to continue the program, there is still money in there to satisfy the contracts that we've made with students that have taken those and qualified and been accepted with an APS scholarship, as long as they maintain themselves in good standing, of course. If this passes, we have no continuity for the students that have qualified for scholarships. And so, I would oppose this because I think it goes to the very heart of the matter of saying there is no security, there is no fund here, wind down amounts or anything else. So I don't understand the purpose of this amendment other than to give insecurity to the program. So thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Diane, would you like to speak to this, or should we call for Jerry Burnett?
I can speak to this, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Thank you, Diane Behrens, for the record. I understand the concept that Representative Seaton spoke to here, and I'm not sure that there is any major concern on the part of the administration for this sort of feature to be available to the legislature. I believe that there was just an interest in having this element before the committee today for discussion to it specifically. So that would be my only comment.
Any other comment?
Okay. Give people a minute. I think people are trying to digest it.
So okay. Sure. We'll just take brief at ease. Education Committee back to order.
Sorry.
For the record.
Repeating for the record, I forgot that we were off. The CS establishes a fund that's a revolving fund so that there's money in there to pay out, and if we decide not to put more money into the fund or we are in a year or two where we can't, don't have the fiscal ability to, let's say, oil prices crashed, there would still be money to fund the scholarships that we've already committed to. And then it would wind down over time if we didn't make up that amount. Same as the municipal community revenue sharing. The reason that model was established that way is so that it wouldn't be this high variable amount. It was pre-funding, and so it's there so that we make sure that when we're making basically a contract with these students, there will be enough for those that we signed up contracts with to pay for the scholarships. If we don't do this, what it means is, I mean, if we pass this amendment, it means we are taking the fund out and we are just saying that annually we may appropriate money or we may not appropriate money, and these students will either have scholarships or not, depending upon that one annual cycle, instead of having a revolving loan fund or revolving fund that has enough money in it to pay the scholarships when there's fiscal hard times in the state. And so that's the whole purpose of the CS section here on the revenue sharing model. And this amendment would delete that and mean that we're going back to just annually funding or not funding a program.
Yeah.
Representative Pruitt?
One of the things I want to, obviously this is just a good, this is just discussion, so. If the legislature, if we put this through, then we actually make the, speaking of the whole bill, actually, if we put it through, I would see probably increased pressure on the legislature, obviously, to make sure that we're funding this. The money that this does not actually say that we have to fund it to a certain point. If we only fund it, let's say, 6-7 million a year, I'm just throwing numbers out, please just don't think I'm, and that's not enough to cover it, then we're actually not adding to the fund. And please correct me if I'm seeing this right. If we were to appropriate more than we needed for the year, it would go into the fund. So it could take years and years, and we finally have up to $160 million. And if we then felt that we needed to contract what we gave through general funds, then we would start pulling it from here to help kids that we had committed to, I guess is the say. But it's not a dedicated fund. So if it's not a dedicated fund and we come upon hard times, could the legislature potentially have to look to it to pull money from? Mm-hmm. That's another discussion point. So if we come upon hard times, I don't know that a dedicated fund or the fund like this is going to matter, because we're going to need the money so bad that if we're not giving it to this program to begin with, we might take money from the fund we had set up anyways. Short of putting, if you know, $400 million or whatever we might need, which is probably something that we need to discuss anyways, if we have additional revenues coming in this year as projected, this might be the year to actually take a chunk of additional revenues based on the current price of oil above the average, put it in an actual dedicated fund, which obviously we need a constitutional change for that, and I think there's one that we actually have a bill out there to do that for another fund. Then this might be kind of redundant, because if we're not going to fund it in a year, then we're probably going to need the money from this. and therefore it might not be necessary. Anyways, just points of discussion. I'll let people kind of.
It's only four that. Negatives.
Yeah. there's a lot of. I'm just trying
brilliant
to.
Observation.
I'm trying to.
Brilliant observation, but four negatives. Representative Sisson, you're the one that needed to just get out.
I do need to leave quickly. However, I guess there's different value systems that people have. To me, education, and this I've lived my life this way, and have seen that others that do profit and others that don't have hard times. And that is, education is, in my mind, one of the most important expenditures that I've ever worked hard to make sure was there. And that this bill is one of those things that makes sure that the talented throughout our state get the education that they need. That it's that you find brilliance all over the place, and we need to have a balance in that. We need to have people who really desperately want to go to school actually get there. And I see this bill as being absolutely essential for us to change the future to one that's sustainable, that we have different kinds of wealth. And so I will vote against this amendment. Thank you.
Okay. Are we ready for vote?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Seaton.
Just in discussion, I'd like to say that, you know, we have other funds. We have PCE, power cost equalization. We have municipal revenue sharing. And we've established those funds with a revolving kind of aspect to them. Doesn't mean the legislature couldn't go in and pull money out of any of those funds, but the idea is we're making commitments to the priorities that the legislature sees so that those priorities will be funded in the, hopefully, as in the long term without going through a constitutional amendment. And so this is the process that we've found with municipal revenue, community revenue sharing, that made that possible and allowed the legislature to say, this is a really important priority and we want to at least set up a fund so that we'll do the most extent we can. So I would encourage people to think that if we truly believe that the performance scholarship is an integral part in changing education, that we defeat this amendment and leave a mechanism in for continued funding.
Yes, and we do have before us today, we have a letter of from the Alaska School Board saying with a complete and strong support for this bill. So are we ready to, Representative Wilson?
Where does this bill go next?
Finance.
Well, I think we should leave it in because it'll make finance talk about the funding.
Well,
Representative Seaton.
And Mr. Chairman, if we don't leave it in, we may as well not pass the bill, because the entire purpose of the legislative task force in bringing this back was to find a funding mechanism. If we take this out, we're saying there is no funding mechanism. We're going to just put it in the annual appropriations or not. So, thanks.
And, Secretary, you want to call roll?
Point of order. Do we have a rejection? Do we have the objection removed?
Do we have the objection removed?
Do it. Is it me?
You had to.
Yeah, I maintain my objection.
Maintain your objection. Thank you.
No,
okay, no, it's good. I'm just trying to get a vote. Okay, Secretary, please call roll.
Amendment 5, House Bill 104. Representative Feige.
No.
Representative Pruitt.
No.
Representative Sisson.
No.
Representative Kawasaki. Representative Wilson.
No.
Representative Seaton.
No.
Chair Dish.
No. Okay, then we have amendment number 5 is defeated, and hopefully next time we won't have all those double negatives. with 2 minutes left, what's the will of the committee in regards to this House Bill 104?
Chair Dick, I move HB 104, the CS version of HB 104, which is version I as amended, from committee with individual recommendations and the accompanying fiscal notes.
Okay. No objection. Committee substitute for House Bill 104 as amended has passed out of committee with individual recommendations and accompanying fiscal notes. Please don't leave without signing. And next meeting, Wednesday, March 23, 8 a.m., we're here. We'll deal with HB 198 and Special Education Service Agency, funding sunset, HB 99, funding for state boarding schools, and...
And you did say as amended, right?
Yes. I did say as amended.
The meeting was supposed to be
adjourned.